call a meeting order. I invite you to stand and join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please call the roll.
Mr. Schmidt?
Here.
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Mr. Scala?
Here.
Mr. Thomas?
Here.
Ms. Nauzer?
Here.
Ms. Hoppe? Mr. McDavid?
Here. We have minutes from the regular council meeting of June 3rd, 2013. Are there any corrections? If not, may I have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Welcome to the meeting. We offer several opportunities during the meeting for public comment. During public hearings, old business, new business. And there is, at the end of the meeting, an open comment section where anyone can speak for 3 minutes on any topic. If each individual is entitled to 3 minutes, once you reach 3 minutes, you'll get a little alarm from my iPhone. If you represent an organization, you can ask for and will receive 5 minutes. We'll start with the appointments. Well, let's do
the agenda.
Yeah, let's do the agenda. Are there any corrections to the agenda?
Yes, I would like to request B-159-13 be pulled from the consent agenda and moved to new business, or excuse me, old business.
Any other corrections? May I have a motion and second to approve the agenda as corrected?
So moved.
Second? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. We'll begin with appointments to boards and commission. We'll start with the Columbia Library District Board. This is a mayor's appointment. I'm going to announce three appointments, John French, Lynn Hostetler, and Gina Scott. For the Board of Medical Examiners.
Mechanical.
Board of Mechanical Examiners. We have one applicant for the one general contractor not in the HVAC business. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Philip Clitheroe?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. For the Commission on Cultural Affairs Standing Art Committee on Public Art, we have one applicant for the one artist vacancy. May I have a motion second to appoint Tootie Burns?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. For the Public Transportation Advisory Commission, do you have a motion?
Yes. I'd like to move that we delay making appointments to the Public Transit Advisory Commission for 4 weeks. There are a couple of reasons for this. At the last meeting, we voted to reconfigure, or a couple of meetings ago, to reconfigure the commission. And we decided to change the staff wording of a dedicated position for an MSA representative, Missouri Students Association. But several council people, including myself, wanted the MSA to be informed of the fact that they could still nominate a candidate. It's just that they wouldn't, that we would, as the council, would make the choice, and asked staff to inform the MSA of that. And just due to an oversight, that didn't happen. I am meeting with an MSA representative tomorrow, and want to pass that along. And so to give them the opportunity to review this opportunity, then I'd like to delay that appointment for 4 weeks.
And we're going to re-advertise as part of your motion, right?
And re-advertise. And presumably all the people, it's very
right.
Heartening to see so many people who have applied. They will still be on
right.
File. They won't have to reapply.
Right.
Okay. Yes, so that's my motion.
May I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay.
There's one other one, Board of Adjustment.
Board of Adjustment is a...
We have one applicant, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And and I've erased it.
The name is Sean Flanagan.
Yeah, there it is. May I have a motion second to appoint Sean Flanagan to the Board of Adjustment?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Those who have contacted the city manager's office by noon on Wednesday prior to a council meeting can speak at the beginning of the meeting on any topic not on the agenda. Only two people can speak on the same topic. We have one request tonight. I will point out that council does not address issues brought up under scheduled public comments at the time the comments are made. The council may well discuss this at the end of the meeting during open council comment section, and if any members of the public want to add their opinion, they may speak at the end of the meeting in the open public comment section. I will yield 5 minutes to Jessica Kemp.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Jessica Kemp. I am the president of the Columbia Board of Realtors, located at 2309 I-70 Drive Northwest. I'm here to speak regarding the recent amendments to ordinances 13-156 and 22-184, which were passed on January 7th regarding overoccupancy. As we have tried to manage the impact of this ordinance, our legal counsel has found numerous flaws. The purpose of this ordinance, to our understanding, was to prevent overoccupancy in rental housing units in the city. We believe the amendments to the ordinance directly conflict with state statutes and the Realtor Code of Ethics, are discriminatory, and they infringe on tenants' constitutional Fourth Amendment rights. If the purpose of this ordinance is to prevent mischaracterization of zoning laws in advertisements and statements made by real estate licensees, then it's unnecessary because the Missouri Real Estate Commission regulations already prohibit this. There are state statutes and case law which create civil liability for such behavior. If the purpose of the ordinance is to place an affirmative duty on sellers and landlords' agents to investigate zoning and disclose that information to a buyer or a tenant, then this ordinance conflicts with years of well-reasoned Missouri law on the subject. By placing a burden of investigation and disclosure for information on a seller's agent for the benefit of a buyer, the ordinance gives consumers false expectations of how the law defines relationships between real estate licensees and their clients. Missouri's real estate license statutes in Chapter 339 were thoroughly rewritten in 1997 to solve this problem. The result was a well-reasoned set of laws that make clear that a seller or landlord's agent has no duty of investigation to any other person than the seller or the landlord that they're representing. These laws make sure that consumers aren't given false expectations by scenarios such as this current ordinance, where a person who is not their agent is given the appearance of a duty to investigate in one area, narrow area such as zoning. Realtors also have a code of ethics, which is consistent with those laws, and reinforce the idea that consumers are actually harmed when inconsistent obligations and duties create additional confusion for consumers in understanding the nature of the agency relationships used in their real estate brokerage. Columbia's new ordinance directly conflicts with the state statutes governing real estate licensees, which if violated could result in loss of their license, and the code of ethics governing real estate licensees who are part of the realtor organization, which if violated could face a fine of up to $15,000. This ordinance has a discriminatory impact, which supports our belief the ordinance does not bear any relation to a permissible public interest. Section 13-156 was drafted to only apply to real estate licensees. It does not apply equally to owners selling or leasing without professional assistance. If this were really intended to assure that buyers were aware of zoning laws, the duty would be applied to sellers and landlords who are not utilizing real estate licensees. The requirement for an owner, operator, or property manager to turn over all tenant information to a police officer or city inspector when investigating a code violation infringes on the privacy rights of tenants as guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution through the Fourth Amendment. This information could include social security numbers, dates of birth, and credit reports, not to mention safe haven addresses of those who are in a dangerous situation. The ordinance is too vague and ambiguous for anyone to clearly understand the conduct required. Legal counsel for the board presented to the city's attorney a list of questions about some of the provisions of the ordinance, and to date, no clarification has been received. When an ordinance is vague or ambiguous, it should be invalidated as a violation of due process because it fails to sufficiently inform the regulated parties what is required of them. The Columbia Board of Realtors requests that the city rescind the overoccupancy ordinance amendments for ordinances 13-156 and 22-184. Additionally, we request an immediate moratorium on this ordinance while city staff investigates the legal issues involved with the ordinance. We would look forward to working in conjunction with city staff to provide a more reasonable and outlined resolution to the issue of overoccupancy in the city. If this ordinance is not rescinded, we have obtained the financial and legal backing of the Missouri Association of Realtors and the National Association of Realtors, along with a recommendation from our legal counsel to move forward with litigation. A coalition of organizations join us in support of rescinding this ordinance. In addition to the Missouri National Association of Realtors, they include True North, the Central Missouri Development Council, the Home Builders Association, and the Columbia Apartment Association. I would like everyone in attendance here that supports rescinding this overoccupancy ordinance to please stand. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As a point of order and process, it is my understanding that a member of the council intends to ask for a rescission of that ordinance. That will be offered at the end of the meeting during council comments. We'll move to old business. Please read 15213.
Council Bill 15213 is an ordinance authorizing a neighborhood stabilization program operating agreement with the Columbia Housing Authority for the transfer of title to properties located at 106, 108, and 110 West Sexton Road, authorizing the city manager to execute a general warranty deed to transfer title to properties located at 106, 108, and 110 West Sexton Road, directing the city clerk to have the general warranty deed recorded, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Now, staff, staff report, is there an issue about the Ridgeway Neighborhood Association?
No, I believe we just haven't gotten through all of the communication we talked about last time, so I believe our request is simply to table this until that happens.
And that would be to the July 15th meeting? That is your intent then, right? May I have a motion?
There are more to be said.
I was just going to say I interpreted council's action to mean this would allow a little more time for there to be further dialogues between CHA particularly and the Ridgeway Neighborhood Association.
I will move for tabling until the staff and Neighborhood Association have had a time to communicate. So I'll move the week.
You need a date on that, July 15th? Is that adequate?
You have to have a date.
Yeah, I have to have a date.
Can we have this discussion before we vote? Is that going to allow time for the applications to?
I'm sorry?
Okay. Yes, that would allow time for the applications for the housing credit, tax credits.
Got it.
I just want to make sure.
Oh,
we're not.
That's a very good point.
Any other discussion on the motion to amend? All in favor of the motion to amend, to table. All in favor of the motion to table to July 15th, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. 15913.
Council Bill 15913 is an ordinance appropriating FY 2012 general fund savings for projects identified by the City Council and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
So this item simply appropriates the funds into the areas in the budget that we haven't covered specifically as yet. So, yes, with that.
And that's contingent on that last item that has a survey that needs to be processed in terms of.
Yes. So implementation steps are yet to come for all of those, but this simply is part of the normal sort of amending the budget process to put the funds in the buckets where they need to be. But the actual act of then spending them will all come back to the council for each of those. So, for example, we haven't gotten the final list together for the $200,000 pot. So once we do that, that will come back to council for final approval before we release the survey. That's an example.
Since each of them will come, oh, well, we're in the question phase, are we now?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's the question, right? Each will come back.
Each will come back. So. We could vote on this. I guess I'll phrase it as a question. We could vote on this, and we would still have an opportunity to vote on each individual item.
Yes.
I pulled this today just because I've had several phone calls and people contacted me regarding this, and so I just kind of wanted to give anybody who wanted to come down here this evening an opportunity to speak on it, and if we could just again, once again, clarify what some of these projects are so that people can understand where those funds were going and maybe some of the rationale behind those.
Yeah. Let me overview very quickly. So the remaining $626,741 really gets allocated in this way. Four projects for the Disabilities Commission that total about $100,000. One of the major ones here is, you know, when you're in a wheelchair, for example, it's very difficult to get out onto mulch or other products we use in playground areas. So we have had complaints from folks who can't get to their child on the playground over that. So there is a product you can use that is good for both users. And so that's one example of a project in that $100,000 to replace mulch with a better surface. The establishment of a revolving loan fund within READY, those specifics that we had in mind have changed, and so that just puts the dollars into a fund. The specifics have to come back for your approval before we move forward on how that fund would work. I do want to stress it's very clear that's a loan fund, not a grant-making entity. So that, you know, exactly how those loans will work is something that we want to bring back before we do anything with. The microloan program at CMCA, this is the program they've had some success with, at a local, very sort of microloan, so small loans to low-income working folks who want to start a business. So web design is one example that has been funded. Another is, I believe, a hairdresser. So both are performing loans. So good success as this contributes more to that. $50,000. The infrastructure projects, the $200,000. So that's the list that we'll have the community choose between. So there are sidewalk projects, and I think one of the items was you know, you could just add it to the resurfacing budget and resurface more street. So that's an option. And then finally, acquire a permanent site for the day center, $126,741. This is that collaborative effort to find a home for the day center and really sort of begin to lock down where Room at the Inn is going to be every winter. But it's also those other programs that really help out that whole pool of needs and service providers. So the city's involvement there is really one of providing a space, a site. There are a number of grant opportunities, funding opportunities, not the least of which is CDBG, for those efforts, which simply can't be funded without site control. So the applicant must have a site that they control before they can even apply for the money. So this will enable that to happen, and that's the overview of what remains.
Can you just explain what the day center is exactly?
You know, Councilmember Trapp might do a better job with that.
The day center's is a program that already exists. It's operated by the downtown churches. Formed a group to assist people who are individuals and families who are dealing with issues in regards to homelessness. Right now, it's in a unit, and HUD is really pushing them to get out because they want the units used for housing. So they're going to lose their space in October, and so they provide an address that people can use for mail. They provide a phone for people so that they can obtain benefits and they can look for work and have a place to be contacted. They have a shower. And then they have a formerly homeless individual who provides some basic social services. Donnie, it's at Park and 4th. I would encourage anyone just stop in and introduce yourself to Donnie and see what people are happening. It's an interesting, eye-opening experience to see how struggling folks live. There's people who he writes notices to prove that people are homeless so that they can get access to services and move towards transitional housing. But it's a little bit of a hangout space. And so we're envisioning of not just having a permanent home for that, but really kind of professionalizing it and wrapping around it with services to where the VA has a very aggressive anti-homelessness program. They want to end veterans' homelessness by 2015 and the city social services department has embraced that locally. That's an achievable goal that we can do. So they've got a lot of homeless services to move people into housing. We want to, and then we've also talked about
Voluntary Action Center, the Columbia Interfaith Resource Council, and some other nonprofits that could be involved with having, you know, low-rent space of people who provide services to individuals who are homeless, that they could be right there, that we could add things that we don't have, like washing machines and a way to move people out of homelessness rather than just make it a less unpleasant experience to be homeless, which is kind of what we're doing right now, but to really put it into a place where we move people into out of poverty and into housing and really make sure that the folks who suffer the most, you know, have a place to go, to hang out during the daytime. And then it could also serve as a space for an inclement weather shelter where we've had the churches operate a program called A Room at the Inn. They dig deep and do the volunteer stuff so that we have shelter for everyone through the coldest months of the year. This would allow us to have a summer version for when it's over 100 degrees, say, or it also wouldn't be if we had a permit. And finding a space was a really, it's been an effort every year. It's a tough thing for a church to take on. So it's nothing that opens up an ongoing financial commitment on the city, but it's a way to provide a space for nonprofit entities to pursue grant funding to build a space and then operate it with conjunction of the churches. It's really one of the neatest, most collaborative, community-wide things that I've seen.
Just a question. As I recall, when you reviewed this, that when the list first appeared, you were suggesting that there had to be a place in order for these folks to make the applications for some of the grants that you just were talking about. So this is just for the place, not for any operating expenses or that
kind of thing. This would be an opportunity for the city to buy a plot of land. City would maintain ownership of the land, which is a great investment for the city, and then it would give site control to the place for a low-cost lease. The wardrobe is occupied that we own that nice piece of property at 8th, and you know, another 70 years when their lease is up, you know, that'll be a nice redevelopment opportunity, and the city of the future will be glad that, because that's going to be worth way more. I think land close to downtown is a great long-term investment. So it's really doesn't really cost us anything. It's just our ability to look forward to most entities can't invest $126,000 in something that is going to have huge payoffs financially in 50 years, say. But it'll also do things that help the neediest citizens in Columbia right now. So I think it's a great win-win for the city. Doesn't cost us really. I mean, it's just choosing to invest in land and then making that land available for this needed social service, which is a really unmet need.
Very well presented. Are there any other questions? And I'll open the floor to anyone from the public who wants to speak.
Good evening. My name is Cheryl Price. I live at 511 Parkade Boulevard. I'm a member of the city's Disability Commission, and I'm also board president for Services for Independent Living. I would like to thank the council very much for the $100,000 that they have committed to our top four priorities that we submitted to the council for consideration. We really appreciate that. And know that you will keep in mind our other priorities as we get future dollars that we can put towards those projects. I'd also like to point out that the one call was, our, I think it was City Manager Mathis mentioned the playground and the surface that is good for everyone. If we could all keep in mind as we move forward as a city and a community, that is a concept of universal design. We really need to be thinking in terms of universal design. And I know the council is getting ready to have someone review ordinances and codes. And if we keep in mind the concept of universal design, it doesn't have to be such a awful thing as the ADA is coming to get you, you know. So I would just encourage everyone to keep that in mind, that universal design will help everyone, not just citizens with disabilities. And also, once again, to thank you, and we really do appreciate the appropriation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any discussion by council?
A number of representatives of churches and social service agencies offered to come and speak in support of the acquiring a permanent home for the day center, and I said that it wasn't necessary because it was on the consent agenda. So there is widespread support for that, but just for, I know political space is finite, and so just there is that support out there.
And they will have that opportunity when these things come down the road in terms of the...
Sure. Please call the roll.
Council Bill 15913. Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Pratt?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nowzer?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes. Please read the consent agenda bills.
Items on the consent agenda include bills 15313, 15513, 15613, 15713, 15813, 16013, and resolutions 10713, 10813, 10913, 11013, 11213, 11213, 11313, 11413, 11513, 11513, 11613, 11713, and 11813.
Please call the roll.
Bills 15313, 15513, 15613, 15713, 15813, 16013, and resolutions 10713, 10813, 10913, 11013, 11113, 11213, 11313, 11413, 11513, 11613, 11713, 11813, and 11813. Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nowzer?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes. Please read new business. Let's do new business, R-11913. Please read the bill.
Council Bill 11913 is a resolution directing the city clerk to place on file for a period of 90 days certain uniform codes regulating the construction of buildings and continued occupancy thereof, mechanical, plumbing, and electrical construction, and fire prevention.
Staff report.
So this is related to the pre-council meeting. We discussed building construction codes and adopting the most recent version of those, and those will be available for anyone who has an interest to come read. Tim, anything to add?
It's really a formality, but we want to put the public on notice that the city is preparing an amendment to its building code, and there are a number of referenced codes in there, and the statute addresses a 90-day notice period for those reference codes. So if you want to see what those model codes look like, they'll be on file at the clerk's office.
So there are three differences of opinion, only three, between the Building Construction Codes Commission and Environment Energy Commission. We will not arbitrate those issues tonight.
Sure.
All right.
Just a question. Will the recommendations from the Water and Light Advisory Board, the EEC, the VCCC, and any others that we have in our packet, and along with the staff report, be available to the public at the same time, at the same place? I mean, since they're related.
I believe we can make all that available. Like I say, the statute addresses the reference right. codes, but I think there's going to be interest in the local amendments to those reference
sure, codes. Sure, it might be a more complete picture to put it all together.
Communications should be bundled together, and the staff can work with the law department on the ordinance, which would be quite lengthy, that local building code.
Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak?
Hi, my name is Harry Alpert. I'm an organizer with the Missouri Sierra Club, here advocating on behalf of strong energy codes in the city of Columbia. It's also clear that the council really values transparency in all that you do, and I believe that this 90-day delay is consistent with that, and support the transparency in this process in particular. You've heard a lot from the Building Codes and Construction Commission and from the Energy and Environment Commission, and I'll try to add just two things that are new. One is to emphasize that a strong energy code makes home ownership more affordable, that as the energy code, as the Environment and Energy Commission representative pointed out, that the increased cost to the mortgage is less than the annual savings from reduced energy usage. And there's a study which I can forward to all of you at your shared address, which is from the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, which shows that accounting for many other factors, a home that's more energy efficient is 30% less likely to enter foreclosure, which is further evidence that increased energy codes, strong energy codes, reduce energy bills, one of the major expenses for homeowners, and make homeownership more affordable. I'd also like to emphasize a document which Mr. Scala mentioned, which is the recommendations from the advisory board to Columbia Water and Light, which state that a strong energy code is consistent with the IRP, the Integrated Resource Plan of Columbia Water and Light, for how they will meet energy needs in Columbia looking forward a decade, and that a strong energy code is also consistent with the vision of the city and will have a positive vision impact for the city. So the Sierra Club is advocating for full adoption of the 2012 Energy Code. This is a stance that's a stronger energy code than even the recommendations of the Energy and Environment Commission. And we believe that the data speaks for themselves and that the full energy code is cost-effective and makes homeownership more affordable. So again, I appreciate the transparency of the council and the great attention that you're paying to this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any discussion by council? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 119-13, Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes. Please read the bills for first reading, introduction first reading.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 161-13, 162-13, 163-13, 164-13, 165-13, 166-13, 167-13, 168-13, 169-13, 170-13, 171-13, 172-13, 173-13, 174-13, 175-13, 176-13, and 177-13, first reading.
We'll move to report 84-13. This is a request for a street closure on 10th Street from Broadway to Cherry Street, request by Tommy Saunders. Richard King has requested closure of 9th Street from Walnut to Broadway from 8 a.m. to midnight on July 12th, July 24th, and August 16th for Summerfest events. And he's also requesting a waiver of the open container ordinance from 6 p.m. to midnight for all three events. This has been reviewed by the Special Event Committee and the CID. And they have recommended approval. May I have a motion to approve the street closure request and waiver of the open container ordinance?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. The next report is 85-13, which is a report regarding adding parking meters on Locust Street between Hitt and Wall.
Council Member Schmidt brought this to our attention, and we've taken a look and are recommending we do meter that. And so if council agrees, we will do that.
If there's consensus of the council, I'd like to direct staff to bring an ordinance forward. It's the one block over there that is not metered, and it's going to be a concern for Sacred Heart Church. I think when staff is looking at that ordinance, an issue is going to be the we worked so hard to get those spaces for the volunteers at Lee School, and they're not very clearly marked, and I don't know what we're going to do when the students move in, because I suspect there's going to be issues, and I don't have any ideas myself, but you might.
Well, when you have a wedding at the church on Saturday, what do we do then? Do we enforce the meters or not?
Can we work out a deal, a low price for hoods for the church?
There you go.
We'll cross that bridge when we get there, but that's the only one that I can think of.
Yeah.
That really is the only conflict we can think of.
I'm thinking we might have a nonprofit rate for meter hoods.
So we have a motion to bring back an ordinance. Is there a second?
Second.
Do we need a vote on that? All in favor of the motion to allow metered parking, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The next report is a report from the Energy and Environment Commission recommending that accessory dwelling units be allowed throughout R1. I'll start by throwing this to staff.
I think this is fundamentally an informational report. It really lists a number of thoughts from the commission that they would like you to consider as you think about accessory dwelling units. Barbara, anything to add?
Please, sir. You've been given a report from community development on this, and I think it's gone back to planning and zoning. And I believe the Environment and Energy Commission, when they sent this, was for you guys to have their information on it and for direction whether or not to send it on to planning and zoning as well to be taken into consideration.
I want to make a couple of comments about this. We've been talking for some time about select areas in the community, particularly, you know, in Mr. Schmidt's ward. This report is recommending allowing accessory building units throughout R1. I would simply advise anybody who believes that's possible to review video from May 16th, 2011 council meeting when we had a very long public hearing over a rezoning on Bushell Street from R1 to R2 to allow one more student in a rental property. And I submit that this is going to end up as a pilot project and that the community will, it's not going to be the community's will to allow indiscriminate accessory development units, building units throughout the community.
I think the idea of or the substance of the Environment and Energy Commission report is that they don't want complexity, and your idea of a pilot area might be the answer, is that in a certain area it's allowed and in other areas it's, you know, as a pilot. I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you're perfectly right. I think that's probably where it would head. On the other hand, we just, I think, my advice would be just to refer it to the Planning and Zoning Commission, let them make their recommendation. They're aware of our discussion, and I'm sure
yeah,
they're
actually,
aware of the
problems
as well.
Yeah, actually, that's a very
good idea. Did you make that motion?
I'll make that motion to refer this matter to the...
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Report 8713 is... a recommendation from the Water and Light Advisory Board.
Anyways, this is informational as well, just to inform your thinking about the building codes issue.
They are advocates of energy efficiency.
That's right.
And its impact on the community and the environment. So it's informational. And
anything to add?
I just wanted to make sure that you're aware of two specific sessions of our new update to the IRP, and so the verbiage is included in your report.
Report 8813 has to do with Heritage Woods Dam.
This is, I believe, informational as well. There were some questions about... a dam some time ago about whether we should accept it or not, and I'll ask Tim to overview that real quickly.
Yeah, of course, there was a long, hard rainfall on May 31st, and we heard concerns, as I think council did, from citizens in various corners of the city, including this Heritage Woods subdivision, where there literally was water over the dam, and it was flooding the street. So there was concern afterwards about, is the structure sound, is the street sound? So that's been investigated by staff, and we've asked for additional information from the design engineer, too. The dam is sound. It appears that a compounding factor in the amount of water that was over the street was the erosion control measures, because while they're good for filtering out the sediments and things, they do impede the passage of water when it's coming that fast. So that was one of our conclusions. And then we also added that there's been some concern about the lake level rising, and that's related to a vertical pipe that had rusted out and was allowing water to drain through it when, in fact, it hadn't reached the overflow point. That pipe was replaced by the developer, so there's no such leakage, and that's resulted in the apparent rise. And it's still within the boundaries of the the lake parcel, so there's no encroachment on additional property by that rising water.
So the developer is responsible for the dam. City is not responsible for any maintenance.
That's correct.
But there is a, hypothetically, there is a public safety issue here. What if that were not the case, hypothetically? What would we be confronted with? How does that work?
If there's some kind of failure.
If there were concern about the dam failing.
Well, we'd do an inspection and take action appropriate to have the owner address that, who is the developer at this time. So.
Okay. Any other questions? 8913 has to do with hazardous tree removal at Cosmo and Stevens Lake.
Well, per our policy, we've prepared a detailed report listing intended actions, and unless council directs us otherwise, we will take down these trees. Mike, any details?
Yeah, we have detailed informational report. Any questions from council?
Just a question. I found it fascinating. We went on an outing for a trail over by the Forum properties, and I thought it was different and unique to be talking about not only preserving some of the trees that were adjacent to the trail, but also some of the dead trees in terms of habitat for some of the Indiana bats and so on. And we even chatted a little bit about liability for dead trees if it happens to fall in the wrong direction, maybe even necessitating cables of some sort to make sure that doesn't happen. That certainly is not the case here for Stevens Park, but nonetheless, that conversation is kind of fascinating given our history about those kinds of things. Liability is always the biggest issue here for these things, as I take it, and that still is true, certainly, within the Parks and Rec Department.
The next report has to do with, this is 90-13, CNG and biodiesel for City of Columbia operations.
So this report really overviews a good bit of some research that's been asked for as we talk about moving toward a compressed natural gas portfolio in our fleet. We're not changing the entire fleet, but a good portion of it to compressed natural gas. Questions always come up about the value of biodiesel versus natural gas, concerns about fracking. And so we felt it important to provide some data about that, and I the data here is I think particularly helpful. We do want to present this to get council's comfort level, to confirm comfort level. We are moving forward in building the compressed natural gas station, and we're at the jumping off spot. So we want to make sure everyone is comfortable, or at least the consensus is, before we do that. At this point, there won't be coming back from that. There won't be a.
I just want to ask a question about this. It's some of the discussions that I think have been occurring as well at the on the Water and Light Advisory Board level, but it has to do with the compressed natural gas is obviously very cheap right now, and it's very desirable, and you lay out the savings and so on and so forth, and as a diversification measure, it seems all very reasonable. The other environmental concerns notwithstanding. But there is the potential for natural gas to be so cheap in comparison to some of the other fossil fuels that there will be an inclination to liquefy some of it and actually sell it to overseas markets. And if that is the case, then the price of natural gas domestically may go up sufficiently that it's not quite as much of a bargain as it appears to be now. Has there been much discussion about that? Have you?
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's why we are recommending not taking the entire fleet to compress it. Is on a completely financial basis, you would take the whole fleet to it. You'd save a significant amount of money long term, not just on the cost of fuel, but on the maintenance, which is significantly lower with compressed natural gas. There's also a local economic development scenario that may be useful. Again, technology invented at the university, which lowers the amount of pressure needed in the tank, and so you can have low pressure gas, which opens up whole new realms for use. So exciting tech. It's something we're looking at, but this uses the standard equipment that's out there today. So yes, that's very much been part of our thinking and why we're recommending taking a portfolio approach where we still retain biodiesel, we still retain diesel. We have to retain diesel in cold months, and but then also have a place for compressed natural gas. And hopefully, if we get, let's say, the Tiger Grant in the transit shop, we can go all electric on some of our fleet.
And the other, and renewables on top of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great.
The other thing, Mr. Scala, is Water and Light kind of tracks the price of natural gas and can forecast what it's going to do over time. So mm-hmm. we do have that ability.
Could I have the report on the forecast? No, I'm joking.
Which crystal ball?
I want to give it to my broker.
I believe J.P. Morgan said it will fluctuate.
And it does.
And I was going to say, I think I kind of was going to ask the same question as Mr. Scala did regarding some of the volatility within the natural gas market is kind of uncertain. And I'm coming in on the end of this because I was not on the council when we approved the purchase of the property for the site. And so I'm kind of wondering why the city is embarking on this entire transaction when this may have been something that the private sector should have done. I mean, it seems like we're kind of having to build a facility to service our own fleet, and the market is not here. They're not building any other vehicles. I don't see any other fleets transferring over to natural gas. I don't see automobiles transferring over to natural gas. So I don't see a big market within the area that would utilize this. And so if you can kind of give me some little bit of background on that. And I don't necessarily know if the environmental factors have been completely answered, because I haven't quite made up my mind on the fracking. And so there's always negative consequences of any of our new energy supplies that we look at, whether it's wind, you know, fans killing, you know, our birds and other environmental impacts. And so I'll still make up my mind on that one, but if you can answer the other.
Yeah, I'd be happy to comment on both of those. There's a chicken and egg issue here. No one's buying natural gas cars because you can't fill them up anywhere. And you can't fill them up anywhere because there's not a demand, right? So it's one of those things where the suppliers have been looking for someone with a fleet who's willing to commit to a certain amount of their fleet to come in and do this. So we're sharing risk with the private company to do this. So in effect, we are partnering with the private sector to create this. Now, that said, Kansas City and St. Louis are fairly significant centers for this kind of use. So there are big fleets that use gas every day in both of those compressed natural gas in those markets. The attraction here is they can't get all the way across on a tank, but they can get here. So the other reason to partner is we connect a grid, a nationwide grid that has a gap in it. And if we can fulfill that need, there's an opportunity to actually, pay for some of our costs through external users who would come fill up, pay a premium. We would get a piece of that to help cover our costs. So in that regard, it's a great business deal. It's scratching a need we have, scratching our own itch, right? But it's also a potential to have other folks help pay for it. And so that's one attraction that led us to this particular outcome. So we believe that there are other users, last thing I'll say on that, such as the University of Missouri, who would love to diversify if there was a source, if there was a way to fuel up.
Made a commitment to.
And we already have two companies that have made a commitment to start purchasing CNG vehicles and using the station.
And as I recall, the company that's going to build the gas station is the same one that gave us the presentation about Columbia is the missing link in a Midwestern network.
Yes.
And that would make it possible to travel with a CNG vehicle through a private person to travel through much of the Midwest. So that is the same company.
Clean Energy. Aren't they building this thing?
Yes, they are. They're building it.
They're building the whole thing?
Yes.
It's their money.
It's their money and our land, if I recall.
That's the beauty of it.
Our land, yeah.
Right, it's our land. They're building the station with their money.
And how does, and with the potential for the Tiger Grant, how does that fit into the?
Well, we will be able to purchase it if we want to.
Possible for $2 million.
Oh, okay.
Which has some financial upside.
You can see from the environmental impacts that you get some big improvements. As far as fracking goes, natural gas, I mean, we have to look at what are we using now? We're using diesel buses. Where's, the diesel is just as likely to be fracked as the natural gas. So this is fracking neutral where we get some immediate savings. Well, it is because, we're switching from one source that might have been fracked to another source that might have been fracked. Mm-hmm. Both of them are fungible, so you can't identify fracked natural gas from
that's just
natural
an
gas.
Interesting term, fracking.
Thanks. I coined that myself.
I can say
and I want to explain is how I've become the voice of fossil fuels. it would be great if we could, if we could run everything off solar and wind, but that's not where we're at. And this is a really important transition measure in a way that it fosters an important technology where the private sector is not always able to do that. And this is a great partnership to where we bring new technology online, we get some immediate benefits or, killing the planet more slowly, because none of this is saving the planet that we're talking about. We're all talking about using resources more slowly. So, we get some big benefits right away, and then the negatives are the same. And so I strongly support this.
Yes, I will too, because we're doing it when it's cheap. We were having the same, sort of before fracking became discussed a lot by the public. And gas was more expensive. People were talking about doing this purely for environmental reasons, and I believe it's part of a diversified energy portfolio. And sort of another problem with electric is the manufacture and disposal of batteries has a lot of environmental consequences, and we don't know the answers. And I think the solution is to diversify. And we're also, 70% into this? We might as well go the other 30%.
We're ready to order 16 vehicles tomorrow, if you're okay with it.
The other issue here, the nice part about this, from my perspective, is the diversification aspect of this. And even in terms of natural gas being attractive for private turbines or commercial turbines in order to make it possible to generate the electricity necessary for electric vehicles, those are the kinds of hybrid ideas that really avoid the nastiness of the real fossil fuels, even though natural gas is a fossil fuel, it's a relatively benign fossil fuel. So I like that diversification aspect of it.
And it would be possible in the future to provide natural gas from other sources. The landfill probably couldn't provide enough, but that's an example of it could come from some other source in the future.
I don't have the same comfort level as everybody else, apparently. It seems that we're about to make a somewhat momentous decision, and I didn't realize that this was coming quite like this. So I would request a delay before making a commitment. If you're asking for some kind of commitment, I'm sort of surprised this is coming up under reports rather than under some kind of bill.
Well, so let me give you just a bit of history. The council has previously decided to enter that agreement to build the natural gas station to buy a certain amount of the fleet with natural gas as the fuel source. So we're at the jumping off spot. We're ready to implement those previous decisions. It's taken some time, as everything does. So that's one reason we wanted to take a break and answer a lot of the questions that came up about it, especially to do with fracking, and then just reconfirm, and this is precisely why, that there's a comfort level with building the station and buying. We're going to buy 16 vehicles. We're going to order them tomorrow if comfortable.
Well, I'm an advocate. I voted for it when you presented it to us. It's a domestic fuel. It is cheaper. It's cleaner. And if we don't do this, we're going to buy diesel from outside the country, and it's dirtier. And that just doesn't make any sense at this point with what we've been through. So I commend Mr. Glasscock and the city manager for taking us down this road, because it is saving us money, it's saving us carbon, and we're doing it with domestically produced fuel. So I think it's a great idea, and I look forward for you buying those buses tomorrow.
No, I don't know if I'm entitled to do this, but I'm going to give it a try and see what happens. I'm going to make a motion that we do not give staff authorization to do this until the next council meeting, because I personally would like more time to research this. I didn't realize that this was hitting quite so quickly.
Is there a second to that motion? Motion fails for lack of a second.
It's already in the budget.
That's informational. Any other questions about that?
And I'll follow up with you on those. Okay.
The next report, we're at 91
you can
now.
Follow
right?
up with me too tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah. I think we're scheduled.
91 is a synopsis summary of initiatives at Columbia Regional Airport. Mr. Glasscock.
Yes.
This is really an effort to, a quarterly basis, give council an update on efforts and what's been accomplished. So that's the goal there. Anything to add, John?
No.
I think this has all been presented publicly. This consolidates it for the record.
Right.
The next report is 9213, which basically discusses the, it defines, I guess, what vehicles under 50 cc's are. You know, the mopeds under 50 cc's and higher are motorcycles and have to abide by motorcycle rules. Under 50 cc's, any mopeds, electric devices, or whatever can be treated as bicycles.
Yes.
I think the impact here is that there are some mopeds parking on the sidewalks.
Yeah, and you know, I know there's a few over by the coffee shop. There's one down by the Strollway Center. But other than that, I haven't seen a lot of mopeds.
This has been a sort of issue that's perennially come up when I've been on the Bicycle and Pedestrian Commission for a number of years, and the answer is always the same, you know, what are you going to do about it? And it's not that big of a problem.
Right, and we have ordinances to deal with it if they're over 50 cc.
If there is a problem, this really is to clarify, if there is a problem, we do have an
right, this is actually an improvement. It makes it clearer.
Do you need a driver's license for less than 50?
Now that I don't know.
You can't get different answers depending on who you ask.
No. Don't?
Okay. So it's essentially a bicycle if it's under 50 cc's.
Can avoid the line at the DMV?
Or if it's electric assisted.
Be like this. Going tomorrow.
So if there are no questions, we'll go to 9413, which is an interdepartmental transfer of
9313,
the parking garage one.
93? Oh, yeah, 9313 is my favorite topic. How many cars are in the parking garages?
They're all full, with the exception of, and 20% oversold, with the exception of the 5th and Walnut. We do have six spots at 6th and Cherry on top that's not oversold, but other than that, everything's full up.
And once again, whenever I start feeling real good about the way the city's going, I drive through the 5th and Walnut garage in the middle of the day and count empty spaces, just because.
We'd actually be oversold if we hadn't included another 50 out of the hourly, so.
Okay.
How many spaces does that garage hold? I don't know.
701.
701, so we're just 49 shy.
49 of oversold.
Of
yes.
Oversold.
So you've sold to 840, basically 20%. Did you say?
Well, we're not there yet on that. We're six but, short of being started.
But that's what your target is,
yep.
And you'll, I presume, evaluate it at that point.
Oh yes, yeah. Yes. I'm sure we can oversell that one by more than 20% if we need to.
So
it's because it's much bigger.
So it's already meeting its financial targets in terms of the bond and so forth, or exceeding it.
Yes.
So garage sale was a good decision, huh?
Yes.
And it's losing money at the rate
plus.
We expected.
And plus, the retail space is also rented. So.
Is all the retail space rented almost?
Please.
Yes, 20% over capacity.
I
winding up on the staircase.
If you drive by or walk by is better. You can get a peek inside. It's all coming together. So even without with the loss of the funding that we had imagined we would have, we've been able to finish it. So that's a real testament.
Predominantly being rented or leased, are they being purchased?
Leased.
We're getting into trouble if we're thinking about imagining the loss of funding. I mean, this is
we're awaiting initiatives between transit and parking, right? For mutual passes, which lever parking spots off of PassCap buses, and I think we all are very interested in seeing what ideas you have for that. Any other questions about the garages? 9413 is a transfer of funds request. Any comments about that? We'll move to general comments by public counsel and staff. Now, after the public speaks, we'll go to the council, at which time I know that the first thing we'll be talking about is the occupancy disclosure ordinance. So I'll yield 3 minutes to anyone from the public who wants to speak about any topic.
Apparently, we're having a very short evening meeting here at City Hall. Maybe everyone will be home before 10 p.m. My name is Eugene Elkin, 3406 Range Line. I am totally shocked at the outturn of the natural gas movement. I think I've spoke on this before. I am a person connected to people's visioning. I'm looking into the future of what's right and wrong, and this is a big wrong, big wrong for location. I do not suggest where to put it, but the point of the story was, after you all started discussing this, I went to a local health care provider, mine, and it's called Apria. This is within one city block of the proposed site. We take natural gas and oxygen, and what do we have? A bomb. I told you my family brought firefighting to the Boone County District area here. I do not want to see the level of destruction going up in our area. We do not need a reputation for connecting this United States of America with further destruction as we go forward. We know there's plenty of experimental ways to get things accomplished. From the north, we have the oil pipes coming down. They're called tar sands. We've had two blowouts in that particular situation using unspecified quality pipe. They're using Chinese choice. As a result of these two blowouts, what's ahead in the area of piping oil? If we take a natural gas car, should it have a leak, we have a combination of oil, we have another bomb potential. Sierra Club earlier this evening speaking on the excellence for energy and home ownership in the future, I felt that was very good comments on their part, that we need all the facets of energy savings for our future generations as well as personally. 8613 was the accessory dwellings. Very much in favor of this, and maybe in the future we can start talking about smaller housing. Maybe the smaller housing has to be a subdivision of smaller homes. We still have the 300,000 plus homes going out on Route WW east of this town, and that is a sad thing. You go south and now you go east, and you're still getting these monstrosity of homes for one or two individuals to try to live in. We are wasting entire national utilities to build these things. Yes, we need jobs in America, Columbia, Missouri, but we don't need to waste funds for two persons where we need housing for many. The natural gas situation, as I was talking about moments ago, it is like a gold mine. We have persons in charge that will not think differently. They say this is just like the gold mine gold rush of yesterday. We are currently having earthquakes out in Ohio. This is so sad that we're actually taking a chance of destroying our own futures by way of earthquakes. We say we're 70% ready. Where's all this money coming from? I remember we had an excess amount of money, and now we got plenty of money to spend on natural gas vehicles. Lots of things to ponder. Thank you for your time.
Anyone else? Seeing that no one else, we'll move to council comments. I'm going to start by asking council if, in fact, we have entered a legal morass with our occupancy disclosure ordinance. Several legal arguments were made that we should immediately put a moratorium on that. I don't even know if you've had time to analyze it.
I think that particular ordinance was enacted before I actually landed at the city, and I have taken a brief look at it. I think there are some enhancements that we can make to it, some modifications, perhaps to make it more defensible long term. Overall, it is the type of ordinance that is many college towns and has been defended successfully by many college towns. But I think there's some tweaks that perhaps staff can come forward with, perhaps putting the disclosure requirement on the property owner, things like that, that will put us in a better position and would be more acceptable to the So we'll look at that on your behalf.
I had a couple of questions regarding this issue. First, I know that the Columbia Board of Realtors was not involved in the negotiations. Just because there was a realtor involved did not mean that there was the actual legal agency that governs the real estate agents in our community. So, and I don't believe the Apartment Association was there either. And both agencies are responsible for complying with this ordinance. And so I would like to, if we're going to move forward and having a discussion on looking at this and making some changes, that they be involved in this. And whether or not it's included in other college towns do not operate under Missouri statutes. And so the fact that some of our provisions in this law, our ordinance, are contradictory to the state statutes, I think we need to look at and address. And I think, too, one thing that has kind of gotten me riled up is the fact that a police officer or a city inspector can walk in and request personal financial information from tenants. I understand why we want this ordinance. There is a problem in several neighborhoods. But that seems to be overly broad and vague to walk in and say, I would like to have all rental documents, information regarding those tenants, because it does include information regarding Social Security numbers, credit scores, and credit reports, which could be a violation of the Fair Credit Act, as well as any constitutional issues that might present. So I hope that those issues are addressed. And I know you were not here at that time, but I have been given a copy of the letter dated January 23rd, 2013 from Maria Sigmund and Browning LLC on behalf of the Board of Realtors, which is a rather lengthy letter and request. And here is an emailed response from legal at that time. So I don't think the request and the response was adequate. And maybe we wouldn't be here today if some of those questions had been answered and dealt with beforehand. So I would just like to point that out. And so I am most definitely in support of working through this issue and making it more palatable so we can achieve the objective that we're desiring, but that everyone involved is comfortable with it and knows the parameters, and that for sale by owners are also required, because I think that's a whole segment of the real estate transactions that are left out of the enforcement.
Well, I think so. What we're asking for is a report.
Yeah.
I'm asking for, I think it just needs to go back to the table. It needs to go back to the, rather than a report. I think we all know the issues. I think the issues that the Board of Realtors have brought forward, I think we need staff and the Board of Realtors and those stakeholders to get together again and see how we can solve these issues. I don't think that the Board of Realtors, from my discussions with them, are going to sit around and wait for too long before they they get the legal.
Well, I mean, there's always one way to force the issue is to make a motion to rescind.
I would be in favor of rescinding it and starting over.
Well, but it would take it would take a first read. It would take a month to do that.
Right.
I'm
now would open it up for discussion.
I certainly would appreciate a before we get involved in making a motion to rescind and voting on the motion and setting the whole thing in process. I would like a report from legal on some of what was just commented on. I mean, I concur with you. I think I was shocked to find out that the Board of Realtors was not involved in some of the discussions in the first place. They were just representatives and so on. And I think that's something that the council is in favor of, this kind of transparency. With regard to the legal issues with the state and differing from some of the other college towns, we're often benchmarked with other college towns, and I think legal certainly is capable of making the distinction between our statutes and our position and other college towns and how they put. But I would love to see that in a report, and that, of course, would be made available to the Board of Realtors and everyone else, too, and then we could make a subsequent decision as to whether or not rescission is a possibility.
As I relive the public hearing, there were 10 proponents, 10 advocates of the occupancy disclosure ordinance. Most of them were neighborhood association representatives stating that we have a problem, we have to fix it. The most articulate opponent was Skip Walther. Mm-hmm. And that's right. I distinctly remember him saying that, you know, we have 25,000 rental units in Columbia, and last year there were 14 violations. And again, sometimes we enter into things where there are unintended consequences. I don't know if we've done that or not, but one of the problems with this inherently is how do you determine who's living? You know, how do you know? You
that
know,
was the original problem.
High school friends coming up for the weekend, cousins coming in town. You know, we all know that neighbors living in residential, living in their homes, you know, don't like the activity that a group of college students create because they live at a different time of the day, right? They mm-hmm. they have the night shift, and they don't like the cars on the street. And I think all of us would react the same way. We got to get up in the morning, go to work, and we got to go to bed at night. And college students are, you know, in a different time zone. And so there's a tension there. There's always going to be a tension between homeowners, families, single-family homeowners, and any home that is renting out to college students. It's a college town, so it's going to be there. So I guess it's been almost 6 months. I think we owe it to everybody to totally review this process. Have we accomplished what we set out to do? Have we created unintended consequences? Have we violated the law? And that's so I think I agree with Mr. Scala that asking for a report is the proper way to go. How long would it take to get a report?
Can we have a month?
Month? Okay.
Back in a month.
And then at that time, we could, depending on the results of the report, we can think about it. If a motion to rescind is appropriate, it can be made at that point, I would assume.
Right.
I would ask that efforts be made to reach out to those parties that came this evening to explain the process and give some clarity on where the process is going. Again, because I do take them at their word, and I do know they have the financing and the wherewithal to bring suit against the city, and I don't think that at this point in time that's something that we want to embark upon. And so
I guess
and
if we're
please
gonna
do not bring this report back up for discussion when we have the power line issues.
But that's the night of the power line.
I know that is the night of the power line. So
are you going to be sick that night?
Just thinking.
We'll
be here till 3 a.m. So unless we break our rule and bring coffee.
Well, 3 a.m. might be a nice time to talk about this.
All right, I'm done. But now let's start down here. Any comments, Ian?
No comments.
Fred?
I'll just add on the occupancy disclosure. It's been 6 months. Part of the purpose of this was to it protects tenants as well as It protects tenants as well as other people who live nearby, which was an observation I made at the time. And so we might look into, in addition to what's wrong with it, what's right with it, and where it came from. Because it's been quite a few months, and all of a sudden it's an issue, and I'm wondering why it wasn't an issue initially.
I'll go last.
Well, you're going last.
A couple things. Well, we're talking about the occupancy disclosure, I think it's disingenuous on the realtors. It was a very wide public process. Lots of folks heard about it. I can't imagine that they did not. In fact, I seem to recall getting an email from the Board of Realtors expressing some concerns for the I'd have to go back through my email account, but I'm pretty sure they commented. One other issue in regards to crime and the appearance of crime, the recent incident reminded me of a constituent recommended, he said he thought that council people were naive in regards to what happens in regards to crime, and he recommended that I spent some time listening to a police scanner to find out what's really going on in the gritty streets of Columbia. Now, I know Ms. Nauser and the work that I do that at least, and I suspect you guys don't strike me as naive people who don't know the ways of the world. But nonetheless, it seemed like that when I almost do anything vaguely reasonable that anybody asks me to find out more about how the world works and to understand what's going on from walking streets without sidewalks to see what that experience is like. And so I would be interested if we could perhaps obtain a police scanner for council use so that we could pass it around. I would volunteer to take a couple of nights and listen to some weekends and find out just kind of what traffic it's like. Help me understand the day-to-day lives of the police officers.
They're willing to do ride-alongs, too.
Yeah,
so I encourage you to just call them.
They used to have a civilian police academy. Several of us have attended that and graduated from it, actually. I'm not sure if that's been reinstituted or not, but ride-alongs are part of that.
The police have a scanner that we could use just to experience that. I had to get this when I ran for city council. I have a rotary phone.
I got rid of mine, by the way.
Do you have internet access at home?
I do have the internet.
Well, you can access, you can get scanners off the internet.
You can get the police scanner on the internet?
Oh, well. There are websites that would get you the...
apps, too.
Apps.
Well, I heard, but I don't have a... My phone barely makes calls.
Your iPad.
On your iPad.
Oh, iPad apps.
Yeah.
We will send you.
You send us
information? Yeah, well, help me out with this technical stuff. I'd be curious. That's all I got.
Well, I've got a few things. I was going to start out with a compliment, but I can't pass this up. I mean, my daughter is a police officer, and I don't take any offense to this naive stuff, but I spent a lot of my misspent youth in a police station listening to police scanners and bringing malted milks to some of the dispatchers, so... At any rate, enough said about that. And I think it's a good idea to keep on top of it and not be naive. We need to learn about that. But one of the things I wanted to start out with was a thank you, actually, for the community development department, because there was some controversy for some period of time about the Benton Stevens overlay. And one of the officers in the Benton Stevens Neighborhood Association wanted to make sure that he expressed his thanks through me to that department for paying some attention, really getting on top of this whole overlay business. I know I asked at some point for maybe some sort of work session to review some of the overlay and so on and so forth, but on their own initiative, the department has apparently been much more attentive to some of these problems and the notification that's involved in the overlay. So he wanted to say thank you. And he wanted to try and do that at some sort of pre-council work session. I don't know if that's doable to work him in to make some comments or not, but perhaps it is, and if it is, I would love to see that happen. Along those same kinds of lines, in terms of council work sessions in general, the dedicated work sessions where we spend some time working on issues that are a little bit more significant or intense or complicated, if you will, it's always been the custom for most work sessions with a lot of the board boards and commissions, never really with the City Council, to allow public comment at the end of those work sessions, maybe for 10 or 15 minutes. I don't know. That's up to the Council to decide. But I wanted to throw that out there for Council consideration, not with respect to the pre-Council work sessions, because we're very limited for time and we only have an hour or so, but for some of the ones that we spend a couple of hours with, it might be nice to make that more inclusive and at least allow questions, hopefully, not statements of fact, from some of the audience members, if they're gracious enough to attend. So just for the Council's consideration, something to think about, maybe we can proceed with that. And a couple of more specific things. One is a couple of issues, just complaint issues. On the Hominy Branch Trail, Phase 1 trailhead, which just happens to be in the back of the mayor's house, right near there, I was speaking with one of the residents in the neighborhood, and he took me for a little tour. And at the trailhead, I believe it's on Lansing there, the trailhead has kind of been neglected. I assume that that was a Get About Her Public Works project that was contracted. And I was a little dismayed that there wasn't at least some, there are a bunch of orange barrels and so on, it's all blocked off, and I know they're not completely done with it, but there's a tremendous amount of erosion there, and there apparently was no emergency grass or any of that sort of thing to prevent some of that erosion, and I thought we might want to take a look at that and see if that issue can be resolved. In terms of when that's going to be finished and whose responsibility it was and if there needs to be more accountability or so on. And then there was an issue that I brought up a little while back about parking on both sides of Lansing, and I know we got a bit of an answer about that. I don't know if that if there was a decision made whether or not to have parking on one side of Lansing where there's a commercial, kind of a commercial area that the university also parks in that area, but it is very narrow. During the weekday, during business hours, and I think it's potentially a public safety issue, so we may want to really take a look at that. And just one other thing, finally, and I'm probably going to get myself in hot water for this, but nonetheless, I feel pretty strongly about it. We were talking a little bit about it at the retreat, and perhaps it's also not a good time since we had a shooting recently downtown to talk about issues like that. Although I will say I always advocated for the patrols being downtown rather than surveillance cameras on public streets and sidewalks. But nonetheless, we were talking about some of the perceptions of crime, and how that's sometimes more important than the crime itself. And it's always been my understanding that most law enforcement agencies tend to work together to solve these kinds of things, and I think that's the way they ought to operate. There is a lot of cross-border interaction and so on and so forth. And we commented that there was a lot of talk generated that doesn't help this situation about being dangerous and so on and so forth. And in that regard, I was not happy to hear the sheriff, Dwayne Carey, talking about how the city of Columbia was not able to control its own destiny with regard to crime, particularly as it related to some of the issues about decriminalizing the penalties or reducing the penalties for marijuana possession, for example. I don't think that's helpful to be speaking in that regard. And I certainly don't think it's helpful to be behaving in a way that potentially can undermine the ability for any law enforcement agency to conduct its work. So enough said. I'm in enough hot water. Okay, it is.
My turn. Okay. I just wanted to, I was going to address the real estate issue, but that's already been taken care of. And I guess my second issue is going back to what some council members have talked about is the issue that happened on Saturday morning. And so I just want to kind of reiterate some of the things I've said over the past, because I'm going to say relatively we have a safe community. I feel safe when I leave here, even if I leave here at 2 o'clock in the morning. I feel safe walking in my neighborhood, walking my dog, whether it's at 8 in the morning or at midnight. But we have a growing problem that is just kind of bubbling below the surface. And I've said this for many years, and it's related to our gang activity with our youth. I work with the youth in the juvenile system. I see them. I know them. I know that they're there. But whenever I have spoken with community leaders, I get the story that, well, just because kids, you know, may wear the same color clothing or hang out together does not mean they're gangs. Well, when we have youth that are hanging out together, that are engaged in criminal activity, that carry illegal weapons, that have similar tattoos, are engaged in stealing and drug dealing, we have a problem. And we have to deal with this as a community. If we do not sit there and say we have a growing gang problem, we are never going to address the problem. And the police department, I know they're working behind the scenes, and I know that they know that this issue is here, but we as a community and as the public officials have to acknowledge that this is a problem that is starting to grow. Years ago, I brought up an issue on graffiti, and people said, you know, that I was some scared woman who was afraid to go town. No, graffiti is gang talk. It tells who owns that block and what they're dealing in. When they tag it, they own it. We have got to deal with that issue. Just on Saturday, I came downtown and I was walking around town filming again, like I did 4 years ago, 5 years ago, all the gang graffiti in our downtown and surrounding areas. And so I hope, you know, several years ago we had an unforeseeable incident in a parking garage that was gang activity. Kids were playing Knockout King. What was our community's response? Security cameras. Did we address the gang issue that the kids were in? No. We put the security cameras up. So we're not solving the problem. We're not addressing the problem. We had two teenagers murdered last year. I didn't hear any outcry in this community other than from certain segments of our community. Yes, they were gang related, but we should not tolerate children in our community being shot on the streets, no matter who they are or where they are. And so until we start to address this issue, we're never going to solve the problem, but we can certainly mitigate it and hopefully deter the activity and get to some of the root of the problem. And so in light of that, I'm asking, and I know we're working on some of these things, but I would like to suggest that we formally and publicly establish maybe a joint task force on gangs. And just because it was a hot button issue for me years ago, I would like a report on the cost and success of our downtown cameras that the city owns, because it's find it interesting that there's a YouTube video posted several hours after the incident, which I'm sure was probably by one of the persons who were participants in the event. So we obviously know that filming people on camera is not a deterrent because they were filming themselves. And I would, you know, would like to know, or, you know, have some community discussion. I don't want, you know, the police to have to come out and tell us everything. But I think it's important that we go to the community and tell them what we are doing in the downtown area and how we're addressing, you know, the gang and just the incidents in the downtown area. And I would like for CPD to look for and collaborate on grants regarding gang violence and gang prevention. It's time our community starts to look at these things. And again, I'm going to go back to that graffiti. As I said, they tag it, they own it. We need to start looking at it. I know people don't want to have to be responsible for removing it right away, but that has been a key to success in many communities, to get that off of the property so that they don't own it, we own it as the community. And so there is my issue on the gang and our crime. And again, I fully, honestly, in my heart, believe that we have a safe community. And I know that Chief Burton and the police officers are doing the very best with what funding and you know, tools that we give them. But I just think as a community, we need to publicly address this issue. On a completely unrelated topic, fluoride. I just wanted to say that I have been approached by a constituent regarding fluoride in our water, and I don't take a position on it either way. I just wanted to say that I've been looking at some of the minutes from the Board of Health on the subject, and so I thought, you know, as a matter of due diligence, that I would contact our supplier of fluoride for our community and ask them, you know, what they do as far as, you know, following regulations and, you know, the safety of their product. I sent that letter certified mail, and I never had anything returned back to me. So I found that interesting that my request and questions didn't warrant a response. So I just wanted to put that out there because I know we're going to be having a discussion on that issue, and I would be happy to share the letter I sent to our supplier. And since I didn't have a response from our supplier, I sent the same letter to all of the suppliers for fluoride chemicals that are placed in water around, for municipalities across the country. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up and let people know that I have made that request, and that is the end of my council comment.
That's everybody. Meeting's adjourned.
Laura, you have a bear.